speaker meeting this afternoon. Now observe the seven traditions.
Okay.
So now I'm going to turn it back over and to our workshop leader, and it's Chuck G.
Thank you. Welcome back, guys. I'm Chuck. I'm an alcoholic. And we left off on page 60 of the book, and we're going to talk about the problem. We've been talking about some stuff, but what's the real problem? The real problem. Why is it? Who in this room has ever had 30 days of abstinence from alcohol and then drank again? Why is that? Is there something else going on there? I had a sponsor. I used to call him up with, you know, stuff that was bothering me, which is typical, which something was always bothering me. And he, what he would do is he would inevitably at some point in the conversation tell me to crack my book open and start reading. And he would always direct me to this part of the book. Like, I don't care what it was. He would say, go to page 60. And I'd turn to page 60 and he would say, why don't you read what it says there and read it in the first person. And on page 60, where it says, each person is like an actor, he used to have me say, I am like an actor. I am forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and rest the players in my own way. Now, keep in mind, I'm an actor. I'm not a director or producer. I'm supposed to read my lines. But this is me. If only my arrangements would stay put, if only people would do as I wished, the show would be great. Sound familiar? Everybody, including me, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, I may seem sometimes quite virtuous. I may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, I may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But, as with most humans, I am more likely to have varied traits. Anybody relate? So I'm either gonna woo you with honey, or I'm gonna punk you around.
Right.
I'm gonna do one or the other to try to get my way. Because I think if you'll do what I want you to do, I'll be all right. If you do what I do, it'll all be. Anybody work anywhere where that, you know, if you know if they did it differently, it would work better? I forget it's their company. What usually happens? The show doesn't come off very well. I begin to think life doesn't treat me right. It's not fair. It's not fair. I decide to exert myself more. I become, on the next occasion, still demanding or gracious as the case may be. Still, the show doesn't suit me. Admitting I'm somewhat at fault, I'm guilty with an explanation. I am sure other people are more to blame. I become angry, indignant, self-pitying. What is my basic trouble? Am I not really a self-seeker even when trying to be kind? Am I not a victim of a delusion that I can wrest satisfaction out of this world, satisfaction and happiness out of this world, if only I manage it well? Is it not evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things I want? And do not my actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? Am I not, even in my best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony? And I'm the guy confused. I don't get it. Why are you acting that way? Why are you doing? It's constant. This to me looks like unmanageability completely. That I become so on edge. It's not going my way. It's not right. And I get this delusion that if I can line all my ducks up, it'll all be okay. I don't realize not my ducks to line up. I get this delusion that if this happens, I'll be all right. I used to think that. It always looks like that. Everything tells me that. If you don't feel right enough, you know, buy a Ford Fiesta. If you don't, buy some Adidas shoes. You know, it's just like you're not okay, buy this. And I start to think and believe this stuff. Like, if it goes my way. And a question for you. When you were a little kid, did you ever think everybody want a bicycle? You ever thought if you got a bicycle, everything would be great? How'd that turn out? Or anybody here ever want a him or a her? What happened? That didn't turn out very well either, did it? Got the wrong one. I always think it's going to be something else. And I've watched this. This is the thing that happens to people like me in sobriety. I've watched this in myself, and I've seen it in others, where I believe the delusion. I believe the delusion that if I can just get this and that, I'll be okay. It's just not true. It's just not true. I never can satisfy the inside with the outside. It's an inside job. It's got to come from within. One of the greatest examples that I ever heard of this, forgive me for bringing this up, but I was with a guy one time, we were reading this, and he said something, and I went, my God. He said, this reminds me of Kurt Cobain. And I said, what? He said, Kurt Cobain. And I thought about that. Kurt Cobain was a kid from the wrong side of the tracks in Seattle. He didn't have a dad. He didn't have anything going on at all. He bought a secondhand guitar, learned how to play it, started writing songs, and he changed rock and roll music forever. Single-handedly, he formed a band and changed the way music was going. And he had the adoration of everybody in the industry. Everybody loved Kurt Cobain. He made more money than anybody. Everything was at his feet. And on a rainy Seattle afternoon, he put a 12-gauge shotgun in his mouth and he pulled the trigger. Because he knew the truth. There's nothing to fit. There's no fixing it. There's no fixing the broken sewer line in here. You know, it's what a funny thing somebody brought up one time. They said, do you realize that there are more suicides in affluent communities versus the ghetto? I thought, whoa, that's interesting. He said, you know why that is? I said, no. And he said, well, when you're in the ghetto and you're down and out, you almost know that if things were better, you'd be okay. You always have that little bit of hope hanging over you. But when you're sitting in a $5 million home, everything, you got everything you want, and you have all the props that say it's okay, and you're not okay, you know the truth. You know the truth, and you want out. And there it is. There it is. I fall into the spot. Bob used to have me read this all the time, because I would be going through something, and I would read this, and it'd be right back to, here we go again. I'm thinking if it was going this way, I'd be all right. And it ain't going to be all right. It ain't going to be all right as long as I got to start doing something different here, because this is the form of selfishness that puts me in a spot. When I was new, they used to say that. They selfishness, selfish. I used to think, I'm not selfish. I share. You know what? I got something. I'll pour you a drink. I'll share my stuff. And they would say, no, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about something deeper than that. And I asked a question, and the guy told me, he said, you know what the most important thing is to a selfish and self-centered person? You know what the most important thing is to a selfish and self-centered person? How I feel. How I feel trumps everything. And we know how to change how I feel. Been doing it my whole life. And sooner or later, I'll go right back. I'll go right back to it. On the next page, he tells me that I'm egocentric, self-centered. He gives me four different illustrations of people who are in judgment. They're all judging society or judging whatever it is. They're in that state of judgment, causing more separation. The illness that I suffer from is a disease, an illness of separation. I separate myself from any answer, from any power, from you, even from myself, and more specifically from the decision I'm about to make in 3. And then he brings up this curious part on 62 where he says selfishness, self-centeredness. Who wants to read that? Somebody read?
Jeff, alcoholic.
Jeff?
Selfishness, self-centeredness, that what we think is the root of our troubles, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusions, self-seeking, and self-pity. We step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation. But we invariably find that at some time in the past, we have made decisions based on self, which later places us in a position to be hurt.
Keep going, please.
So our troubles we think are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot. Though he usually doesn't think so, above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of selfishness. We must, or it will kill us. God makes that possible, and there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us have moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them, even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help.
Boom, there it is. So what do you do for a living? What do you do for a living? Oh, I'm a lawyer. What do you do for a living? I'm a painter. What do you do? I'm a plumber. What do you do, Chuck? I make a lot of crap. My troubles are of my own making. That's what I do. I manufacture crap all day. Want some? I'll share it with you. Selfishness, self-centeredness, the root of my trouble. Underneath everything going on, below the surface, is the self, driven by 100 forms of, under the lash of, in bondage to, 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, and self-seeking. I step on the toes of my fellows and they retaliate. It seems like I've done nothing. And I put myself in positions which place me in a position to be hurt. And I do it without even knowing it. It's so subtle. It is so subtle how I do it. I expect stuff from you. I expect you to behave differently than you are. I expect you. You say thank you, and I think they didn't say thank you right. Yeah. Sponsored somebody right now, and they came to me and told me about how someone is treating them. And what happened when they went over there? And I said, hold on a second. Let me get this straight. You went over there expecting to get what? Well, no. What did you expect to get? Did you go there to give or did you go there to get? Ooh, there we are. It's the expectation that just, that's the, I'll tell you, that's the bad part of the deal here. It's my expectations placed me in a position to be hurt. To feel persecuted, to feel self-pity, to feel all of that. If I will go around in the world and operate like I'm in God's hand, everything's fine, and I'm just doing whatever I'm doing for fun and for free, I don't expect nothing back, I'm all right. The minute I attach something to it in power, here we go. Let's watch this. This is going to be fun. Over and over and over again. This is the root of my trouble. And he read it very well at the end here. I can't reduce my self-centeredness, but must by witching or trying my own power. I have to have God's help. Self can't be rid of self. If it could, it would create a vacuum. I need God's help. Questions, comments, anybody on this? Anybody agree? Not agree?
100%. Gary, for me, the definition is that first paragraph. Well, when it was pointed out that I'm not just driven by fear alone, 100 forms mm-hmm. of fear.
It's a lot.
That hit home with me. I'm just, full of fear. And then the definition of self-seeking, like you said, talking about Kurt Cobain, I created this image or it's been created for me, and inside I know I don't deserve any of it. I'm a piece of crap. And no amount of money is going to satisfy it, no relationship. That's where the guy comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Going to fix it.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Anybody else on this? Please, anybody? Yes.
I have a couple things. One is when I was sick, I was not good, and my sponsor made me read this every morning, every night, in front of the mirror, out loud, for 30 days.
Uh-huh.
60 to 63, and it literally transformed my mind, and it, to this day, it's like this is where I go. That's the reality. The reality is, I'm kind of a crazy person, and the only way to fix that is God. Period. There is no I'm crazy, I made a mess, but now I can unwind this. And that's a rewiring thing that needed to happen for me. But it still happens all the time. I'm always fear-driven. When I look underneath everything, there's always fear underneath everything.
Yeah.
And when I find out what that fear is, and I can call it what it is, that does provide some relief where I can get into the solution. But I was in school this last year, and in October, six weeks in October, I was that. With all the other students because they weren't behaving properly and they were hurting my feelings and doing all kinds of misbehaving and then I all of a sudden woke up one day and realized that I didn't care and it was all fear based. I let go of the fear. I said my prayers and it's all this mm-hmm. stuff that we're reading and it's like I'm like okay I'm done. I don't have to live that weight anymore. But I could go there like that.
Yep.
And it's been another many years past that. It's like, it doesn't matter. This is what's in me. Mm-hmm. I go to this crazy place.
This stuff, the trouble with self is it never completely goes away. It has this resurgence. You ever watch that movie Terminator, the first one? There's a scene in there where the girl bites his hand, and he says to her, he says, "That Terminator's out here. It's going to get you. It will not stop. It can't be bargained with. It won't be glad until you're dead." And that's kind of like self. I don't care how much I think I'm balanced and doing well. I remember one time I was in this meeting, and there's a guy talking about having all his defects of character removed. He's, "I used to be really angry, and I don't get angry anymore. I love everybody." I remember Clancy, but let's go spill some hot coffee on his new suit and see if he can recapture some of that. So here it is. I can't wish it away. I can't make it go away. This is the how and the why of it. How does it work? It tells us. Why does it work? It tells us. We had to quit playing God. Boom. I've quit playing God. I don't play God. Yeah, I do. I told that with this guy one time in Las Vegas. He said to me, "You know, Chuck, the difference between you and God." I said, "No, what is it, Maddie?" He said, "The difference between you and God is that God doesn't run around all day long trying to play Chuck." That'd be right. I play God by my judgments. I play God by what I think it should be. I could watch the news and I start answering every problem of the world. Just start walking in the room. Why is he wearing that? Yeah, just start. It's just constant. It's the judgment. It's the judgment. It's the separation. It's that cancer of the soul, that spiritual tapeworm that tells me that we're different. That tells me I'm alone. That tells me God's somewhere else. All of that's going on. I got to quit playing God and take on a new position here. At the top of the page on 63, it tells me here that in this paragraph that I must decide here that hereafter God's going to be the director, the principal, the agent, the father. And these are simple ideas. These are versions of power. And it really is placing me in the position to be the servant. It's taking me out of management, which I've always thought I was good at. I'll manage your life. I can't manage my life, but let me work on yours. And here it's telling me something different, saying, "No, we're going to start making something else the new manager. You're fired. You're fired because of your poor performance on the job." So we're going to get a new manager. And if I take the position of he's in charge, I work for him. I'll do what he has me do, wherever it is, wherever I have to go. I'll do it. I'm down. I'm done. I'm done with me. I'm sick of me. Anybody ever heard that point before? Mm-hmm. I'm just sick of me. But I love me so much. So let's see what happens when that takes place. In this book, it's amazing because Wilson always gives me, he'll give me the position I'm in. He'll give me something to do. And then he'll give me the results after, which you can call promises. They're all over the book. It's littered with them. Here he's going to give me the answer and then the action. Here comes the result of doing this properly on 63. Who wants to read it? When we sincerely...
When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all powerful, he provided what we needed. If we kept close to him and performed his work well, established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, we enjoyed peace of mind as we discovered we can face life successfully. As we became conscious of its presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. We were reborn.
Let's stop there. Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. Anything, guys? Anything at all? I have a new employer. All sorts of remarkable things followed. Wow, this is what's that going to be about? I have a new employer being all-powerful who provides whatever I need. Whatever I need. Here comes a provision. If, which means there's something going to be required of me, if I keep close to him and perform his work well. What could that be? How would I stay close to God?
Meditation.
Got to be around his kids. I got to be around his kids. If I'm around his kids, and I'm doing stuff for fun and for free to help his kids, which is going to be, I'm going to take some steps to do that, but there it is right there. If I do that, whatever I need will be provided for me.
I was going through a financial time. It was so bad. I was like 10, 11 years sober. I was in debt. Business was failing. It was bad. And I was picking up guys, running around, and my sponsor kept telling me, Chuck, just keep taking the actions. And he'd tell me, this is going to be your year, kid. And I'd be one more year further in debt. Like, dude, you told me last year it's going to be my year. And I used to grab home and I'd be pounding the steering wheel going, what do you want from me? What haven't I given you? Like I'm entitled to something here. And it took a while before it just started to click. Like, you know what? I'm taken care of. What am I panicking about? Well, I'm not drinking today. I'm living a life that's completely different than I've ever known. What do I expect? And he told me something which I found to be true. He said, God pays well. God pays well. And your job is to take care of his kids. To do stuff for fun and for free. Wanting nothing back. I used to watch this guy. He ran a bunch of liquor stores in Las Vegas. He was pretty well off. He drove a really nice Jaguar. And he would pull up and these guys would get out of his car and these homeless guys would be getting out of his nice car. And he'd think, why is that guy homeless guys around? And then I got it. I got it why he's doing it. Because he's got nothing without that.
Right.
Nothing without that. That wasn't his car he was driving. He was driving God's car. Third step story for you real quickly. If you had heard it before, I apologize. Drunk's on the side of the road. He's pathetic. He's at that place of demoralization. And he gets on his knees and he says, God, please give me some right. God pops up. Says, you want sobriety? He says, yeah, I'll do anything. He says, what's it going to cost you? He says, how much? He says, how much do you have? He's got $50. He says, sobriety's going to cost you $50. He says, but if I give you $50, I can't put gas in my car. Oh, you have a car? Sobriety's going to cost your car. He says, well, if I give you my car, I can't go to work. A job! Sobriety's going to cost your job. But if I don't have a job, I'm going to lose my home. A house. It's going to cost your house. He says, but what's going to happen to my family, my life? He said, that's right. It's going to cost your life. And then drunk in his desperation thinks about it, and he turns it over to his father and says, okay. And so then God stands there and hands him back his $50, and he says, here's your money back, but it's never your money again. It's my money. You get to spend it on you people. You get to buy them coffee and hamburgers and maybe they need clothes or something. It's not your car anymore. It's my car, but you can drive people to meetings. You can pick them up from detox and out of jail. You can drive up the penitentiary and see those guys that haven't heard about me yet. You can have your house back, but it's never your house. It's my house. You get to live in it. And that family is not yours. Based on the way you behave, you've lost anything to them, but you can take care of them for me. And your life is never your life again. It's my life, but you get to live it for me, serving my kids. And that's the deal we're making. That's the deal we're making right here. If we read the prayer, we're going to see that in the prayer. It tells me here that I must perform his work well or try. And if I do that, if I'm established on that footing, I begin to lose sight of my little plans, my little Chuck world. And I start to become interested in seeing what I can contribute to life. What I can do for others. I feel power flow in. I feel peace of mind, a sense of ease and comfort watching another guy get well. That'll blow your mind is when you find yourself worried about somebody else for a moment. I've watched this happen over and over with guys. I got this one kid. He comes from a really wealthy family. He's the most selfish, self-centered thing on the planet. And he's just destroying his family. And they finally cut him off. This guy, unbelievable selfishness, like me. Just like me. Him and I are good together. And you know, I watched him get sober, and I watched him start to sponsor people. And I saw the most remarkable thing happen. I saw a ringside seat to the greatest show on earth. To watch this guy just, it was about them. It was about what he could do. I watched him weep over a guy who OD'd and died. Just fell apart. Because he had fallen in love with something. It touched him. And we're talking about that. We're talking about doing this work so that I can do that. I'm reborn. I have a new life. I begin to lose. Not I lose my, I begin to lose. Let's not mix that up. I'll never get rid of it entirely. I begin to lose my fear of today, tomorrow, and thereafter. and I'm reborn. If you don't like that term, a new life, a way of living, a change, it's better than it used to be. Whatever, however you want to define that. Let's read the prayer. We're now at step three. Who wants to read it? Who wants to read the prayer? Thank you.
God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would hope of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Can we keep going?
Yeah, go ahead, just finish that.
We thought well before taking the step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to Him.
Okay, let's stop there real quickly. So there's the prayer. My friend Cliff R., if you haven't heard Cliff, you want to hear his talk, but he says these are the formal terms of surrender. He calls them the formal terms of surrender. The prayer is really well crafted. Anybody want to comment on it at all? Yes.
For me, when it was explained, I mean, I read this hundreds of times, and then they have... I had Matt sit down and break it down for me, and it just had so much meaning. Relieve me of the bondage of self, my own thinking. God, relieve me of that prison that I put myself in. What we've been talking about, my thinking. Take that away. And then take away my difficulties. And what he said to me is the way I view the world. I look at the world through fear, we talked about. You know, I look out there, and I see things differently because I'm looking at it through fear. And it just changed the meaning of that prayer. Mm-hmm. After all those years, I finally got the third step. And that's what it takes to change. Yeah. But it had to be explained, the definition. But.
Yeah, Bob told me, it says, build with me. And he said, you know, kids, sometimes when you build something, you have to do some demolition.
Right.
And you might say this prayer, and God may take it more seriously than you are. What are you not willing to give up? This is what he did for me. He had me read the prayer over and over. He explained what the prayer said. He said to me, when I'm asking, I'm saying here, make my life none of my business, which is, that's brutal. But it's really what I'm saying. I'm saying that to relieve me of the bond of self, take away my difficulties and victory, that I may bear witness to those I would help with that power that way. Take away this, not so when you take away my difficulties, I get the new home. Not so I get the new career, the new wife or husband, the new whatever it is. It doesn't say that. It says, so that we bear witness, so that we help somebody else, so somebody else would see that it works. I think that we're walking reflection of this book. We might be the only big book anybody ever sees. And this book isn't the goal. This isn't people like really sacred cow the book. The book is important, but it's not the goal. This is the roadmap. It's the roadmap to the goal. The goal's in here. I got to dig up the stuff and find it. The prayer is great. It's very well crafted. What he did for me was this. This is what I do with guys that I sponsor. Is I have them read these pages for several days, and then I have them go think well. They go, oh, I'm ready to do the prayer. No. Go think well. I want you to think well, and then call me and tell me when you've thought well. And then they go, I've thought well. I say, okay, come on over. We get together, and the way I was taught was this way. I get on my knees. And I put the book on a table or on a chair, and he gets on his knees, and we hold hands, and I read the book. We read the prayer together, and I tell him, let's go on our knees and say the prayer. I'm going to follow your lead. You can start, and when you decide to get up, however long that is, if you want to stay quiet for a while, whatever you want to do. I'm here to do it with you. And when he starts to read the prayer, I read the prayer with him. And I do that for the reason that I was taught. Scott taught me this. We do it because I know the prayer. I've said it a few times, but he doesn't. So I want to dignify him enough to read it with him. So I put the book down and read it with him just the same, because we're equal here. We're shoulder to shoulder. I'm not leading anybody. I'm not here to do. I'm here to walk shoulder to shoulder with a man who's probably going to save my life if I think about it. You know? So that's the way I've done it. We get off our knees. I give him a big hug, and I tell him, you did good. You did good. Now we got to do some work. Because it says at the bottom of the page, next we launch. I'm going to tell you why this is important. One of the things that you're going to see in Alcoholics Anonymous, if you're like me especially, you've already done it. But if you watch people in AA, you'll watch them do what my friend calls the AA waltz. AA waltz goes like this. Step 1, 2, 3, drink.
1, 2, 3, drink. 1, 2, 3, drink. Right? 1, 2, 3, cycle back before step, drink. 1, 2, 3, drink. Because I take the step and I think something's happened and it hasn't. I mean, it's a great step to take, but it's really the formal terms of surrender that I'm going to commit to the process. Because in and of myself, I have no ability to turn my will, my thoughts and my judgments, my life, my actions. I have no ability to do that over to the care of a power on my own. I'm the kind of guy, I'd go to like a Tony Robbins seminar, you know, and I'll buy all the books and I get all excited and, you know, I'm on fire for about a week or two. Then I go back to being me. I'll go to church with people and I'm excited. It's dumb that thing. So I got to do something that's going to really, if I take the steps, this is going to happen. If I take the actions, I don't have to worry about, well, can I do that? Well, it doesn't matter. Let me take the steps so this can occur. Because it's in doing the steps that this starts to happen. This is the agreement that I'm going to do it. And it says at the bottom of the paragraph here, next we launched. Now, what's the time reference on doing a four-step from Matthew to the third?
Immediately.
Next is a time reference. Launched right into it. I hear people go, "Well, I take a step a year." My favorite one is don't make any important decisions in your first year. Well, do you want me to do a third step? I think that's pretty important. Let me say something too. If anything that I say or quote is against what your sponsor tells you to do, I am wrong. Your sponsor's right. I am wrong. Your sponsor's right. I think that relationship is important. And I never, ever want to get in the middle of that. Ever. I'll be wrong. It's okay. It's all right. My inventory tells me the story of my life was I was wrong. I just actually wrote another one. I have a sponsor. I've been working with him for a while, and he said, "Look, I did a bunch of 10 steps with him." He said, "You know, why don't you go ahead and write a fourth for me?" So I did. I wrote it, and we spent some time on it. Really great guy. He's sober 4 years less than I am, because I'm a humble guy. he's a friend of mine, and he's a really bright guy, and he has what I want. He has what I want. The time doesn't matter. It's never been brought up. Never been mentioned. He's a guy that walks like he talks, and he's having a really good time with this thing. And he came at a time that I needed that. And I knew that I could tell him anything. I knew that I could be transparent with him. And I must be transparent with somebody here or I'm in trouble. I got to tell somebody everything that's going on in my head that I'm not telling everyone around me. He's got to hear about it. Important stuff. Off topic, let's go back to the book. Page 63, next. Who wants to read?
Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us have never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom. So we had to get down to the causes and conditions.
Boom. So where we are, here's the beginning. This is the beginning of the actual work that we're going to be starting. Though our decision was vital, life-sustaining, and crucial, it would have little permanent effect. Is anybody here would like to have a permanent effect from drinking? Or just a temporary one? So if I want to do this, I'm going to probably have to do this if I want a permanent effect to it. Less at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of those things that are obscuring me or blocking me off from the power. The things that are blocking me off from the power. The things that are making life so rough. So I'm going to start looking for those now. This is where the work starts. Has anybody here not done a four step? Thank you. One of the things that I want to bring up is we're looking ahead. If you haven't got this part of the book, we're looking ahead, and please don't let anything we talk about from here on discourage you at all. Because as I take the steps in order with a sponsor, I'm going to have what I need to take the next steps. If something looks daunting or that's impossible or I can't do that, that's okay. as I take them in order. It's like if you walk into, you know, first grade and you know how to read. They just teach you how to read, and then by the time you get to high school, you can do the SAT test. If they threw an SAT test to you in the first grade, you should, what was this? But as I do this in order, so please don't be discouraged about what we're going to be reading. One of the things that disturbs me, which is my problem, but I find it very difficult to sit in meetings and have people talk so frighteningly about step four. Like they scare people. And I'm going to tell you, anybody you hear talking about step four as being something negative in any way at all, usually it's being done by people who haven't actually done one. Usually people who haven't done one will talk like that. People who have done one will usually share their experience and how it started the freeing process, how things started to change in that. Now, the work itself, it's a list of prayers, lists and observations and prayers. That's really what it is. A series of lists, observations, and prayers. And we're not looking for how bad I am. We're not looking for what a scumbag I am. We're looking for what I am not. This is what I am not. This is what happens when I don't have a power in my life and I'm running on self. The fear dominates me and I behave in these ways. I'm looking for the thing that God made me out to be in His image as I look for the blocks in that. Anybody want to comment on that at all? Question anything, guys? It's been the truth. Yeah. This isn't what I am. This is how I go on autopilot. I just need some direction. You know, this, when we bring up the stuff in page 63 that's bothering me, I can run so long. I'm really good at that. I can pray for them. And a lot of times I get relief. A lot of times it gets better. But when I find myself wrenching, my sponsor's good at telling me, hey, pal, I think it's time to start writing some inventory on that. And I have to write out, I'm resentful at, and what's the cause? We're going to read about that right now. At some point in the game, I got to look at the real deal so I can look at the defects of character. What are the defects of character fueling my anger, my resentment, my judgment, that if God would remove, it would all dissolve? What is it? Because it's eating my lunch. I don't realize what it's doing. It's like an app on your phone running on a computer, running in the background, taking up energy, ready to crash the machine. I don't even see it's there, but it's in the background. It's just running. And I wonder why I'm being such a jerk, and I'm so off key, and why everything's bothering me. I don't even know what it is. It's just running and running and running.
Fear.
The spiritual tapeworm. Cancer of the soul. Mm-hmm. Just eats it from the inside out. Let's go to the next. Let's go to. Let's read. Therefore, we started. Who wants to read that?
Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This is step four. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact finding and a fact facing process. It is an effort to discover the truth about the stock in trade. One object is to disclose damaged or unvaluable goods to get rid of them promptly and without regret. If the owner of a business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values.
One more, please.
We did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honesty. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure. Being convinced that L manifested in various ways is what has defeated us, we considered it common manifestation.
Let's stop there real quickly. Anything, guys? Comments or questions, anybody? I like what he did here. He did something very kind for a guy like me. Because I don't want to write about myself, especially the things that I'm going to be putting down here. And he's kind of saying, hold on a second, Chuck. Let's not take this personal. Let's do this like a business. I run a business. And it's true. If I don't take inventory, I don't know what I have in the warehouse. If I don't take inventory, I don't know what the value is of things because they change. I'm holding right now. I have a ton of. I'm in the beauty business, and I distribute products. I'm holding a ton. I'm almost embarrassed to tell you how much stuff I'm holding. The package just changed, and I was holding a lot of it to sell for more profit, and I held them too long, and now nobody wants it. So now I'm calling up closeout guys trying to dump it, and I'm going to lose money on it.
I have to take inventory. I have to see what it is. What's the stock and trade here in my life? My thinking, my judgments, my ideas, my beliefs. That is my stock and trade. If I can't discover the truth about that, if I don't see what's good and bad, the owner of the business is not going to be successful. What's that mean for me? I'm going to get drunk. It's almost like I like the analogy that Ralph tells about the electronics store. I'm running an electronics store, and I got a lot of stuff in there. I got 8-track tape recorders. I got cassettes. I got Sony Betamaxes.
Oh, wow.
And I wonder why I'm going broke. I wonder why. So what do? I either close them out, throw them out, and start putting in some DVRs, DVDs, all the new latest technology. And that's exactly what I'm doing here. Like a fruit stand. The fruit's rotten. No one's going to buy. So what do? I throw the old fruit out, clean the bin, and put some fresh fruit in. And that's what we're trying to do here. That's all we're doing. I'm taking the things that aren't going to work, looking at them and going, well, that one's gone. Well, this one's okay. It'll work. And trying to sort that out so I can bring in some new stuff. Because obviously what's been going on isn't working. So the book tells me this, that self is manifested in various ways. And its common manifestation that they're going to address is going to be resentment, fear, and sexual misconduct. So we have 3 inventories to write. We actually have 4. We'll talk about that as we go. But this is the beginning of this. And the first one is resentment. Resentment. Who wants to read resentment's number one offender? Thank you.
The number one offender. The story of one alcoholic and commits in all forms of spiritual disease. We have been not only mentally and physically ill, but been spiritually sick. The spiritual malady is overcome to be straightened out mentally and physically. Dealing with resentments is a symptom on the table. The list of people, institutions, the principles, we ask ourselves why we drink. In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were great. So we were sore. We were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Is it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sexual relations, which have been an improvement? We're usually as definite as this.
You want to stop there? So, okay, number one offender. It destroyed more alcoholics than what? You mean even Jack Daniels?
Right.
You mean even Jack Daniels? You mean even Budweiser? That's what he said. Than anything else. It's a killer. It's a killer. I questioned that for a long time until I started paying attention in Alcoholics Anonymous and watching what happens to a lot of people in AA, sometimes sober a while. My sponsor, I remember there was a guy in his home group that was very successful, sober a long time, and he got real resentful at the home group and stopped going. And he went into his office one day, took a bottle of pills and put a plastic bag over his head and tied a knot on it. Resentment. He wasn't drunk. Hadn't drank anything. He didn't take the pills to get loaded. He took them to die. Resentment. The number one offender. Number one offender. It destroys what I call it anything than anything. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. We've not only been mentally and physically sick, we've been spiritual. We have a spiritual malady. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. What a promise. What a promise. That goes away. It goes off the table. What an amazing thing. Anybody, questions, comments? In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. Boom. So here we go. We listed. Stop. We list. Here comes the list. We listed people, institutions, and principles. It doesn't say people, places, and things. I know that's mentioned a lot around the rooms. It doesn't say that. It says people, institutions. Mom, dad, brother, sister, wife, husband, exes, bosses. Boom, 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 boom. They're all there. Institutions, the IRS, LAPD, FBI, SEC, the church,
whatever it is.
Yeah.
Sometimes I find it's an individual in that institution. Sometimes it's the institution itself. So I list the institution and principles. What are principles?
Beliefs.
Principles. Monogamy. Perseverance. I hate, you know, I have a tough time with perseverance. That really bothers me. It bothers me that you could that you could pour yourself out, do everything you want in AA, and then you stop doing that and you're loaded and your life burns to the ground. That's kind of troublesome to me.
Sure.
You know, so things like that can be self-supportive. That bothers me sometimes. I wish I could marry some rich woman and just take it easy. So anything like that, I list. So I list down. I start writing down the list. So I ask the question, who is it? And then I ask myself, why am I angry? What'd they do? What's the reason? And I find that it's usually, I find out what it affects. It affects my self-esteem, my pocketbook, my money, my ambitions, what I think it should be like, my personal relations, my sex relations, my self-esteem, my security, and my pride. I look at that stuff. What's self-esteem mean? That's how I see myself. My pride, how do you see me? That stuff affects me. I could say, I don't care what anybody thinks about me. That's not entirely true. That's not entirely true. People say that all the time. I don't know about that one. So I list this stuff down, and I write down the cause, the person, the cause, and what it affects, and the fear associated with it. That's the process I start. So we have the diagram on page 65, what's kind of baffling is this. He gives us that, and then he kind of puts the rest in paragraphs, so I don't see the other stuff. And if I just do this, I'm resentful at cause, what it affects, and that's all I do, I'm going to have a documented proof that people are jerks.
Right.
And I need to move on. I need to go further than that, which we need to do. But I think we have to take a break.
All right. So we are.